And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
As long as they keep making animated Star Wars, Hope Molnix and Chris Honeywell will be on the case. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi, a project that began with Clone Wars and now may never end.
Hello everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a bi-weekly podcast talking about some Star Wars. I am Hope. You're going to not hear Chris at all this week because he's not here, though he is listening and editing the so hi Chris, hi. What you are about to hear actually is a very special panel that I did at 221B Con 2024. And it is a panel celebrating all things The Phantom Menace, because in case you're under a rock, hey, guess what? The Phantom Menace turns 25 this year, and I'm ecstatic, and I'm in, like, my best time because I fucking love this movie, and this is, like, hope time. It's hope time, everybody. Hope time. It's great. And so this is actually going to be the first of some Phantom Menace content coming the next couple of episodes. This is the first. And then the next episode, we actually recorded already with our friend Dario, the forever, ever after future, once in future Candy King. Dario Gonzalez, and he is our friend, and we already recorded a video celebrating, not a video, an audio celebrating everything Phantom Menace, and then after that we will be wrapping up Star Wars Visions before we get to season 3 of The Mandalorian. Anyway, don't think about it, it's fine. So, yes. Just a little bit about 221B Con, though, if you've never heard about it before. It started off as an everything Sherlock Holmes convention, but in the last 10 years, it has evolved into a very gay, very queer, very pro-LGBTQ community, which is a multimedia con. And I did all sorts of panels while I was there. I did an Anne Rice panel, which you can actually see on the Geeky Waffle YouTube, where I talked all about the AMC show Interview with a Vampire with my bestie Megan. I did an Our Flag Means Death panel. I did a panel on asexual media, media all about asexual characters, the good, the bad, the ugly. And I was on all sorts of panels. They have writing panels, they have fanfic panels, and of course, they have Sherlock Holmes panels. It is a Sherlock Holmes, well, it started as a Sherlock Holmes convention. It's like 60% Sherlock, 45% everybody else. And I know that's an extra 5%, but like the extra 5% is like, we had gay prom, you know, we had a dance, and like that's like an extra 5% where, like, you know, we had gay prom and there's like a room to hang out with like a TARDIS and like it's chill and quiet and everybody's loved and blah blah blah. So yeah, 221B Con is awesome. It's a super cheap chunk con in Atlanta, Georgia. You should check it out. You should go. It's a lot of fun. And yeah, so you will now hear the 25-year celebration of The Phantom Menace from 221B Con, and we will be back next week. Not next week. We'll be back next time. Well, y'all, I'm still getting used to the bi-weekly schedule. I am a mess. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening. Enjoy the panel, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye!
Hello! You want to come talk Star Wars with us? We're going to talk about the 25th anniversary of Star Wars The Phantom Menace.
Oh,
you can abandon ship now.
I would start you. Sorry.
That's totally fine. No, man. A fan's a fan.
Start it, yes. We're with all the stars.
All right. We are a minute in. So y'all ready to talk about my third favorite Star Wars movie?
Your third favorite?
Oh, I have a chaos list. My list is chaotic, but I'm going to explain that. So... anyway, hello. My name is Hope Molinax. I am an entertainment journalist. I work for several publications. This weekend, I'm here representing the Geeky Waffle, and I'm also representing J-Guys and Jedi. But I'm also a player on a Star Wars tabletop RPG called For Light and Dice. So if you want to hear six gays fail at Star Wars constantly while rolling dice, we are an all-queer cast, and this little card has our cute little artwork on it. So, yeah. So Phantom Menace turns 25 this year. Isn't that wild? It is crazy. And I unapologetically love this movie. I did go on a journey of how I got to this. And so a little bit of background for me. Growing up, I watched the movies when I was a kid. My mom was a big sci-fi nerd. She's the one that showed them to me. And I liked them fine. And they were okay. And then Phantom Menace came around. And it was my first Star Wars movie I saw in a theater. And it was just big. I was 10 years old. I was the right age for Jar Jar Binks, so he was just great. I found
the right age for Jar Jar Binks.
There is, because I will firmly stand by, Phantom Menace is a children's movie.
Oh, yeah.
It is made for kids. It is a kid's movie with a kid protagonist. And hello, welcome. And so I saw it when I was 10. I remembered the Duel of the Fates. I remembered Darth Maul. And then I promptly went home and went back to Sailor Moon and Pokemon and forgot all about it. And so it wasn't until I was older is when I became a Star Wars fan, which was because my favorite medium is animation. I love animation, and I saw The Clone Wars in theaters, the Clone Wars movie in the theatrical release, and I loved it. I immediately fell in love with Ahsoka Tano. And it was how I always wanted to see a Star Wars, which was animation. Which, funnily enough, is George Lucas's favorite medium as well. He actually said when making Droids and Ewok in 1985 that Star Wars functions best in animation. And he loves the medium. So that's how I got into Star Wars. And so I started consuming all this media, especially around the prequel era. And I watched all the seasons of Clone Wars. And I started reading more books. And like that's how I became a Star Wars fan. But when it came to Phantom Menace, I started a podcast, Jagos and Jedi, and we were rewatching all the movies, and I hadn't seen Phantom Menace since I was a kid. Like, I saw bits and parts of it, and I was very ashamed by a lot of the backlash, being like, but I did like Jar Jar as a child, but no, I have to be cool and act like I don't. And so it wasn't until I had to rewatch this movie for a commentary that I sat down and I actually rewatched it for the first time as an adult. And I found myself having fun. It was like, it's a flawed movie. It has warts. Parts of it does not age well, but it's fun. I really enjoyed it. And I was like, what is happening to my adult life that I'm loving Phantom Menace? And it actually gave me this like realization that I really needed two Star Wars rankings. Because to me, there's a difference between best made Star Wars and personal favorites. So when I say that I have a chaos list, I'm talking about my personal favorites, which is Rogue One, Clone Wars movie, and Phantom Menace. Those are my top three, and I love them. No hold bars. Solo's up there, too. Solo's a poorly made movie, but boy, do I love it. But it's flaws and all, though, there has to be at least some respect for Phantom Menace, because not only did it change the course of the franchise, this movie changed the course of cinema. Some of the things that George Lucas did were groundbreaking at the time. Like, and then let's start with Jar Jar. You know, without Jar Jar, we wouldn't have Gollum. We wouldn't have the Na'vi in Avatar. We wouldn't have Caesar in Planet of the Apes, because they really pioneered that technology. And it would come eventually. Like, CGI was already in the process, but to have a character like Jar Jar Binks was historic for cinema. The fact that George Lucas used digital filmmaking, which was kind of happening, but he was really the first to pioneer it. Now it's the norm. And it started with Phantom Menace. And he made several choices, bold. I find them bold choices, that he had the gall to... I've been looking forever for an interview, because I know he said it, and I cannot find it, and I've been looking for it for months. But he said that in an interview once, that he could have just made another New Hope. He could have just cashed in on nostalgia. He knew he was taking a chance, and he chose not to. And I will always reward a filmmaker for trying something new and failing than not trying at all, because he knew fans were going to backlash. And I like that about the Phantom Menace. I like that the Jedi suck, because we had this idea of what they were like from the original trilogy, that there was these great warriors, and they're just this kind of corrupt organization. I think that's just so ballsy. Is it controversial? Yes, a very controversial decision. But I found it incredibly ballsy to do that, that he just went against what people were expecting of him. And he knew it was going to cause problems. But I love this movie so much. It is my one of my favorites, and I love Qui-Gon. I would talk. So, but I want to hear about you guys. What do you guys think about it?
It's my second favorite.
Yeah! My man!
My first favorite is A New Hope, because I was, when it was just the first Star Wars movie, I was in college. I was at the right age. I can still picture the scene where Luke is standing there watching the two sunset, and there's the nostalgic music behind him. He's like, what the fuck is my life? And I was in college, getting ready to graduate, going, what the fuck is my life?
Yeah.
It spoke to me so deeply. And then I liked the other two in that trilogy. They were just fine.
Thank you. I have personal issues with Empire Strikes Back. It is the best made Star Wars movie, but
probably, yeah.
I have like personal story issues with that movie.
But there was something about Phantom Menace that just, I don't know, it just spoke to me a lot deeper. I jumped right into the Masters and Apprentice archive. I read all the Jedi Apprentice story books. Well, I stopped at a certain point because they got weird.
That is a very good summary of the extended universe. Yeah, this was really good until it got weird.
About when they introduced the love interest for him, for Qui-Gon Jinn, which was very strange. But anyways, because of course his love interest is Obi-Wan.
Then he missed like a half dozen blonde women that Obi-Wan found.
Yeah. But, so yeah, it is, definitely has a nostalgic thing for me still.
No. No, I get that. I'm. There are certain things I've learned how to appreciate it the older I get. Like, and one of those is Shmi Skywalker. Like, Shmi Skywalker is probably I would throw up there as one of the most underrated characters in all of Star Wars.
Can you imagine letting your little son go away, hoping for a better future for him?
That's what I actually love about it. Because, like, people, do you guys know what the Machete Order is?
Yeah.
The Machete Order, for anybody who doesn't know, is essentially like chopping. It's A New Hope, followed by Empire Strikes Back, and then you go back and watch Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, and then you finish with Movie 6. And this whole idea is that you're following Luke's journey until he finds out that Vader's his father, and then you go back to the two prequel movies to like have those flashbacks of how that happened, and then you finish the trilogy. But they always cut out Phantom Menace, and I totally disagree with that because Phantom Menace, to me, are the seeds of Vader. You have this child who is a slave, who has to leave his mother, go to a place where they clearly tell him, hey, you're not good enough to join us, and the one person who believes in him is Qui-Gon, and he dies. And then he's pushed into this like religious organization with these people who told him that he's not good enough to join them. Like, these are the seeds of Darth Vader.
With a master who's not really ready to be a master yet.
Obi-Wan is not ready.
He is not ready. There is already, I think, a little seed of resentment in him because all of a sudden Qui-Gon Jinn's focus turned away from his apprentice that he had, saying, okay, yeah, he's ready. I'm going to push him out the door and take on this new kid. Wait. Wait, master. What?
Oh, yeah. And
so there was already, I mean, there's two narrow of an age gap between the two of them to be master and apprentice.
Yeah, but like I adore like the older I've gotten, I've adored Shmi Skywalker more because Shmi is just this underrated character who, like, I'm not a mother, like I'm a very firm aunt, and I live in Ant Town, and I love being aunt. But like I can't even imagine the pain of just letting my child go and not knowing if you'll A, ever see them again, and B, not knowing if they'll make it.
Well, and just the whole, it brings up the whole, like you were saying, the morality of the Jedi's, because a moral organization would have gone, okay, yeah, we don't have enough money right now, we have to count on this kid when he was fathered. But we've got the Jedi organization behind us. We get back home, we take a bunch of money, we go back and buy her freedom. Yeah. So she can come back. Yeah, she maybe can't live in the temple, but she can live somewhere on Coruscant. It's a huge fucking place.
Yeah, one of my favorite jokes is the Jedi accountants going through their numbers and they're like, wait, Qui-Gon Jinn bought a child? What? It's one of my favorite They're like, that can't be right. But yeah, it's a complicated movie. And like, yes, it's a movie for children, and I still stand by that Phantom Menace is the perfect Star Wars movie for kids. It's made for kids. But it's also deeply, it sets up everything from, that we know about Star Wars. It sets up Palpatine, the fact that he's the Phantom Menace. Fun fact, the band song that plays at the end, the Auggies Ragtime Band, is actually Palpatine's theme in a major key and sped up.
Huh.
Because it's his celebration. He won. And it laid so much groundwork. And that's one thing I do appreciate about Star Wars movies is I call them the bones. They are the bones of the franchise. They hold up the franchise. And then, like, the TV shows and the books and the comics, like, that fills in the rest of the body. And that's kind of what Phantom Menace did. We get introduced to this political system that's clearly morally corrupt. We get introduced to this Jedi Order, who we originally heard were these great mythical warriors, and they kind of suck. And now, I love that the Jedi suck, though, because they're, you know, they kind of stand in for religious institutions and so on and so forth. But I love that choice that George Lucas made, because he could have cashed in on nostalgia. He could have made an easy movie, and he chose not to. He chose to make a complicated choice. Is it really well executed? No, it is not a well executed movie. Yes.
Can it be one of my personal pet peeves with Phantom Menace?
Yes.
The moment, the first time we see Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan, I'm like, wait, that's the Jedi uniform? Because, you know, when I saw the first movie back in the day, it's like, okay, Obi-Wan Kenobi, desert rat. But I'm like, let me get this straight. This guy's supposed to have been in hiding for decades, and he was wearing his uniform the entire time?
Listen, I never said George Lucas was smart.
Plus, he's chosen to go in hiding on the planet that Darth Vader came from.
He would never go back there.
Yeah.
Too much sand, too much drama.
No.
I can rationalize, but the uniform thing bugged me so much.
You know what's actually, there's a really great documentary called Looking for Leia. And it's a documentary about women and non-binary and queer people who carried the franchise over the years. And the very first episode, it ran on like Sci-Fi for a while, but now you can only find it on their website. And the first episode is the history of fan fiction and the women who carried fan fiction. And it has these two ladies, and they've collected zines from over the decade, like original fanzines, which are gorgeous, by the way. Like, they're opening these fanzines, and it has the original artwork that, like, fans created in the 80s. But one thing that they pull out was their original cosplay, because they had no idea what a Jedi looked like. Oh. So they pulled out their cosplay from the 80s, and it's just this like stellar gold robe of what they thought the Jedi Council looked like. Yeah, I highly recommend it. It's called Looking for Leia, and it's a wonderful, wonderful documentary, because the first episode's all about fan fiction. There's an episode about how the Navajo Nation dubbed A New Hope completely in their language. Ooh. And there's, and it has like different factions that focus on different things and different parts of the fandom, and how women and queer and non-binary fans have carried the fandom for decades. Great. Highly, 10 for 10 recommend. Phantom Menace don't always recommend, but I do love it. So, but speaking of taking this, like, streaming Skywalker, I also think it was a very bold choice to take one of the most iconic villains of all time and making him a child. Because you have Darth Vader, who is this character who scared people the first time they saw him in the 70s. You have great videos of dogs like running out of the room from Darth Vader, because he's the scary creature to them, and he's monstrous, you know. And of course, like, they humanized him when they took off the mask and Return of the Jedi. Wow, I took me way too long there. It's only the first panel. Let's hold this together. But to really humanize a character in kind of like a pre, like, now we're humanizing our villains kind of time period in media, you know, we didn't really have a lot of that in the late 90s, early 2000s, that kind of time period. It was around. And like, humanizing your villains is nothing new. this is not new concept of media, but having that kind of like in that big time period at the time, like this was pre before like everyone simped over Loki, me included. But to have, to show this child who is scared and wants to stay with his mother and has these ideals from Shmi put into him, like one of my favorite lines from the movie is Shmi not being sure, and Anakin looks at her and tells her, "Mom, you always say that people don't help each other enough in the galaxy." And that is such a Jedi moral that she put into her son. And watching that for the next two films, whether or not you think they're executed well, is really good storytelling. Clone Wars made it better, because I will always stand by Clone Wars. But that is such an interesting choice to make Darth Vader this monstrous, fascist-looking guy, this very sympathetic child who is scared. And fear is a really important part of the dark side. Yes, they say fear leads to anger leads to hate, anger leads to dark side, blah, 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 blah. But that is the beginning of Vader, is him being this child ripped away from his mother and for a chance at a better life to only go to a more corrupt organization. And it's damned if you do, damned if you don't, because what's better, slavery or the Jedi? And on the surface, it does seem like the Jedi. And I am a Jedi apologist. I do like the Jedi, but I also love that they're a really corrupt organization. Though, there's a new book out called The Living Force, which is the Jedi Council going on a road trip to touch grass, because Qui-Gon... that is how it was promoted! That is how it was promoted. It's Qui-Gon Jinn tells them to go touch grass. So all 12 members go to an island to help people, and it's a Jedi road trip. And I haven't read it yet, and I want to see it.
That sounds amazing.
That's amazing. What is that again?
It's called The Living Force by John Jackson Miller. It just came out on Tuesday, and I haven't had the chance to buy it yet. I want it. So bad.
Yeah.
Because it's been promoted. Yeah, it's been promoted as the Jedi Council goes and touch grass. That's how it was promoted. Can't wait to read it. It's on my to-do list.
You know, one of the things with The Phantom Menace, too, is there's so many if-only moments. Like the one I was mentioning, Ashmi.
Yeah.
I think I just said pirate's name. Stick.
Shmi! That's all right. Yeah. I'm down to having a Hook podcast too, man. I love that movie.
But, you know, the whole thing about the speech, you know, I sense much fear and it all leads to this. Okay, so interrupt fear. You know, then it will lead to the dark side kind of thing. You know what? There's things to do that they could have done to prevent him from turning.
Like Kevin, you know, just be nice to a kid. What a wild concept.
Jedi are more into abstinence than prevention.
Jedi are more into abstinence than prevention. Wow. Yeah, I can't argue that. Oh my god, that's amazing. I want that tattooed on me. Oh man. But something also cool I find about The Phantom Menace is, like, whether or not you think it, you like it, hate it, we're still looking at the repercussions of it all these years later. You know, there's a new show about to start, what month is it, April? I don't know what time is anymore, it's fine. The Acolyte is starting next month. And Acolyte takes place 100 years before the events of The Phantom Menace. And it's in the tail end of what's called the High Republic era. And, which, by the way, if you want to get the gayest of gayest Star Wars, go read the High Republic era. It has all the gays. That's where they all are. You like your non-binary characters? They're there. You like your New York pronouns? They're there. You like boys kissing boys and girls liking girls and non-binaries liking non-binaries? They're all in the High Republic. Yeah, that's where your guys, gals, and non-binary pals are. It's great. What was I talking about? The Acolyte. it has set up this era of the beginning of the end of the Jedi. And what I like about the High Republic era is it starts at their height. It's their golden age. One of my favorite lines in the opening book, which is called Life of the Jedi by Charles Soule. And in one of the opening chapters, when the Jedi arrive, they're in these, like, gilded ship called Vectors with, like, gold trim. And it has some line along the lines of, like, they're gold because they can be. Right? Because this is the Republic's golden age. This is the Jedi's golden age. The whole point of the High Republic era is how they get to Phantom Menace and that tumbling downturn towards it. And that's where we're going to be seeing the Acolyte coming out next month. And it is this idea of how did we get here? And that's what this show is going to explore. I can't wait for it. It's being headed by a queer woman, as trans actors and writers behind the scenes and stuff too. It's going to be great. Can't wait. I 10/10 recommend Acolyte. But it is going to be this kind of dark time where we know that these shadows are rising because we have to get to this era that's been laid down by the Phantom Menace. So 25 years later, it laid this groundwork of stories that we're still exploring. You know, it's how did the Republic get here? How did the Jedi get here? How did Anakin get here? We don't know. We don't know what his dad did. He doesn't have a dad. It's the Force. It's fine. He's space Jesus. It's okay, I guess. Wow, that's a horrible thought of him being space Jesus. Happy Easter. That's fine. But it is not the best made movie, and I'll be the first to say that, because there's about a 20-minute political segment in the middle, but by God, it's fascinating to me, but it's really dense and slow and boring in a lot of ways. But it did lay this groundwork of stories that we're still exploring. And it also gave us some really great characters, like Padme Amidala. I have not talked about my girl Padme yet. I love, look at your face, you just lit up. You wanna talk about Padme Amidala?
Talk all about Padme Amidala.
So, I did not get a better appreciation of Padme Amidala until the Handmaid books came out. What are they called? They're by E.K. Johnson. It's Queen's Shadow, Queen's...
Peril?
Peril, Queen's Hope. I think that's the three trilogies. The three trilogies. The three books of the trilogy. But reading the first one, which I'm not even going to try and recollect because I clearly can't remember the title, it gave me such fascination of this 16-year-old girl and the process she went through with her handmaidens to create Amidala. It talks about like their makeup and their hair and the dress and how and why and everything is and why they chose the voice they do. Because Padme is a woman, Amidala is a symbol. And how do people create symbols of hope? How do people create these beings that can be looked up to? And Sabe became instantly one of my favorite characters. She is so heckin' gay in that book. If E.K. Johnson could, it'd be Annie Who in a heartbeat. I have a love-hate relationship with E.K. Johnson. It's fine. But that is one where I do love her because it really takes the time to show 16-year-old girls being 16-year-old girls. It takes the time to show 16-year-old girls being stressed by power. It's one of the best books I've ever written from a teenage girl's point of view. And seeing how men don't always understand this. And it's what happens when you let women write female characters from a female lens, because it is very much a female book, which is, it's not for everybody. I've had plenty of my guy friends just being like, this wasn't for me. Cool, it wasn't written for you. And I want to normalize that. It's okay if not everything's for you. Star Wars is big. You don't have to like all Star Wars. It's fine. I don't like all Star Wars. It's okay. I made it very clear at the opening of this. I don't like Empire Strikes Back.
Really?
It is the best made Star Wars. That's actually over with. I have two rankings, the best made Star Wars and my personal favorites.
Fair.
And I personally don't like Leia saying no, 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 and Han forcing a kiss on her for 80s storytelling. It bothers me. I have issues with it. But it is the best made, and it's excellent in that faction. But what was I talking about? Gay Sabe. So it's really something that I really appreciate about the movie is that, you know, all these years later, we're still exploring these characters. We're still exploring these movies. Even Jar Jar. Like, I love Jar Jar Binks. I am waiting for the day that, like, someone just, like, gives him his due. I was 10 years old. I loved him when I was a kid. When I first saw him, he was funny. In Clone Wars, he gets a girlfriend, which is one of my favorite episodes, where he has this longtime girlfriend named Julia, and he's Jar Jar's on a mission with Mace Windu, and Mace Windu definitely knows that Jar Jar was with his girlfriend in the next room. It's one of my favorite episodes of Clone Wars ever, because Mace Windu knows. And this woman is just making out with Jar Jar. It's so good. Thank you, Dave Filoni. But I think even then, like, we've seen these characters get fleshed out, and I think that does help the movie. Like, Maul was a nothing character, and then when you get into, like, the animated side of things, he's like a Shakespearean-level villain. He is just one of my personal favorites because of the work that he's done. And I do think that is one thing that 25 years has helped the Phantom Menace. I think when it first came out that people didn't really know what it was, but we've had time to explore that since. We've had time to, like, really delve in and get into the meatiness of what George Lucas was trying to say. Because again, the movies are the bones and everything else fills out the body of Star Wars. And I think that really helps. So who else likes stuff? Yeah.
With Maul, they just need to have him show like some piece set after points on and not explain anything. You know, he survived death one time, he can survive it.
I really like Maul's death in Twin Suns. I think it is a very perfect lightsaber duel. So if anybody doesn't know, Maul tracks down Obi-Wan Kenobi in the desert of Tatooine in a Star Wars Rebels episode called Twin Suns. And it's about as the fastest lightsaber fight you'll ever see. It is maybe 5 seconds long. But it's not the point of a lightsaber fight. The point of it is Maul has not grown. And that is the fault of the dark side, is he is still stuck in revenge mode. He has not grown. He has not looked at his life. He's not moved past it. In fact, he tries to use the move that killed Qui-Gon Jinn on Obi-Wan. And it fails. And Obi-Wan at this time has grown. He has become a better. He's moved on. And that's the whole point of the Kenobi show. Right. Is he's healed. He's moved on. He's grown. He's let this anger and this regret go. And so when you get to this final fight with in Twin Suns, it is a very simple duel. It's a Akira Kurosawa duel, because that's one of George Lucas's inspiration, is these samurai films, specifically Kurosawa. But it's all in the lead up. You see their feet moving, you see them positioning, you see them repositioning for one slice, and that's all it takes. Because that's the point, you know, it's digging into these concepts of that the Phantom Menace laid down, is that Maul lived through revenge, and that was his only thing that kept him going. But he never grew as a person. That's why he's a Sisyphus. He's the mythology of Sisyphus, where he will always push the boulder up the hill and he'll never get there. So he'll always roll back down on him. That is his story. He is playing into that mythology. And that's what Star Wars is. I Star Wars is not sci-fi. Star Wars is a mythology. It is a modern mythology. It is space fantasy. Pablo Hidalgo, who is the head of the Lucasfilm Story Group, has said, if you want sci-fi, go watch Star Trek, because that is not Star Wars. And that's why everything's sometimes kind of weird. It really is a certain point of view and what people feel and want and stuff like that. And that's why sometimes things don't always work out logically. Sometimes lessons have to be learned because they're morality tales. And, you know, I'm specifically referring to Sabine Wren and Ahsoka, the Ahsoka show, because people were like, why did Ahsoka, forgive her? Because it's a morality tale and this is a mythology, and that's how myths work.
You just have to go back and look at ancient myths to realize that it didn't always work out for the supposed good guy.
Yeah, and the fact that sometimes it does, it really just depends on the story being told as well. You know, the whole point of the Ahsoka series is Ahsoka learning to forgive Anakin and let go of him becoming Darth Vader so she can let go of that pain so she can grow herself and become a new person. That is the point of the show. So in turn, she's going to forgive her Padawan because it's a myth. That's how they work. So, but I I do also love about this movie the technology we saw coming from it. You know, I said at the beginning, like, we wouldn't have Gollum. Or Andy Serkis wouldn't have a job without Phantom Menace. And one of the joys I've loved seeing over the last few years is, as a prequel kid myself, seeing the prequels be re-embraced again. You know, like, I didn't fully grow up with the movies when I was a kid because, I, you know, animation's my medium, and Sailor Moon was way more important than Star Wars. Pokemon was way more important than Star Wars. And don't get me started on Digimon, because that was my jam. Listen, Kenny Chijoji has a better redemption arc than Darth Vader. I will say it now.
You are so right, Bessie. Oh my god.
All right, Kenny Chijoji.
It's not hard to have a better redemption arc than Darth Vader, and I say that as somebody who loves Anakin's storyline.
Okay, we're gonna have to end to this. Okay, let's talk about redemption for a second. This is the problem with Star Wars redemption that we're only just now really addressing as of right now, Bad Batch Season 3. All redemption arcs so far in Star Wars, and I'm including Agent Kallus, who I love from Star Wars Rebels, because it was originally the best redemption arc we've seen on screen. I should clearly say on screen, because books are a different beast of their own. Most redemption arcs forget about one very important step, and that's atonement.
Yeah.
You have to atone. Cool. You can be like, yeah, I turn away from the dark side all day. But the problem with Anakin doing that and immediately dying is he didn't have to face any consequences.
Yeah.
And there's a great book by Claudia Gray called Bloodlines, which is about Leia facing the consequences of her dad being Darth Vader. Because it's found out that she's Darth Vader's daughter, and that is certainly not cool in the Senate.
Yeah.
And it's that he never had to face it. His children had to bring that burden. That's the whole point of the Ahsoka show. Ahsoka had to carry that burden. Anakin never had to carry the burden. He was just like, yeah, I'm hot Hayden Christensen. Let's just bounce. Go. I mean, it's fine.
Yeah, some people say the whole thing about, you know, him basically sort of saving him before he dies. That's it. I don't think he was going to get out of that anyways.
Yeah, one.
So, and it was seconds. It wasn't, you know, any kind of real atonement.
No.
And it wasn't, I mean, he wronged a galaxy. He wronged a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And atoning to his son a little tiny bit, I don't think that balances.
That's the gold star. He got a gold star sticker for that. Yes.
Just jumping ahead to the sequel trilogy for a second, talking about the idea of atonement, one thing that I would have loved to see them do, they knew there was no way they were going to do this, but two things that I'm actually hoping to do. One, I wanted to see Mad Boy King Kylo Ren. Mm-hmm. And two, I wanted to see Kylo Ren facing a war crimes tribunal.
That would have been, yeah. I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with sequels because I love so many of the concepts, but there's parts that I wish they didn't do. I'm the last Jedi
that
apologist.
How that with a plan? It boggles mine.
I don't know.
Yeah. Especially since at that point, they'd already had books that sort of, they sort of took little bits from. Yeah. They could have said, okay, we're not going to take this as canon anymore. This is now the side stuff. But we know what works and what doesn't. We can take the good
only
bits.
They didn't know what worked and what didn't.
Well, they could have knew what were doing. They do take the good bits.
I will stand by Legends, though. I will stand by Legends and Extended Universe. There is a lot of things in Legends and Extended Universe, bonkers, crazy, and not. We'll throw out Chewbacca getting killed by a moon. And a mountain that cries. I keep forgetting about that one. But there is still a lot of stuff that is the groundwork for what we see now. Like, Timothy Zahn, who wrote the original Gone trilogy and the Return of the Jedi, blah, 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 he has talked about that the importance of legends can still exist. They are the campfire stories to be told around, that in characters can tell stories around campfires, and like about the time that Luke Skywalker fought Thrawn. Like, and there's still power there in those stories. And they are still very important. What were we about to say?
Atonement.
Thank you. When it comes to atonement, though, like, Star Wars has not been really good with that. Mostly on screen. And we're actually just kind of getting it. There's a great show right now called Bad Batch that's running. It has three episodes left at this time. And they have this great character named Crosshair. And he's one of the original members. And this might be the best redemption arc that Star Wars has ever done. Because the whole basic premise is they are clones. This is the end of the George Lucas era. This is like one of his final ideas. And they are a group of clones that did not go through Order 66 because they're specialty clones. And Crosshair chooses to stay with the Empire. And his brothers choose not to. And so for two seasons, a season and a half, Crosshair is like in with the Empire and doing war crimes and doing that, being a good soldier following orders, until he finds out that he's just as expendable in fascism. You know, he is in a fascist cosmos gear and he's just as expendable. And he has to leave. And he kills his first officer, he goes back to his brothers, with drama. There's drama here. There's stuff. I'm trying to be big. But his brothers are like, yeah, you tried to kill us multiple times. And then he faces other clones, and these other clones are like, yeah, you tried to kill us multiple times. Buddy, we don't trust you. And he has to, like, earn back their trust. And not everybody forgives him right away. There's a plucky great girl named Omega, who is a really well-written character. Should have been trans, though, because she is clearly trans-coded, and they should have brought in a writer, because they put in the text that she is trans, and then veered away wildly when people were like, yay, trans character! And then they veered hard the other direction, like, no, she is a girl! Girl only! I love Star Wars, I promise. But this is the first time we're seeing a really well-written atonement and redemption in a character. And I do think that is a strength of the TV shows, because it has the gift of time. You know, if we wanted to see the Kylo Ren tribunal, that could be a movie of its own. I want it, though, because I do want more genre in Star Wars. I think that's something that Marvel has done really well, is they play in different genres. Like, and to have, like, a courtroom political thriller around the court case of Kylo Ren, that could be a really fascinating standalone movie. I also want my $20 million rom-com that happens to be set in a Star Wars. Look at you. You know, like, think about it. Like, these two people are just on their first date and they keep accidentally blowing up Imperial stuff. And somehow they accidentally join the Rebellion and all they want to do is get their, like, pasta to go. Like, I want these kind of movies because Star Wars is so big that we can have these kind of different genres. Instead of just kind of being a lot of the same thing. And I think that TV shows are starting to move towards that. Andor is a straight-up political thriller. It is a political thriller first and a Star Wars second. And I think that's why it really resonated with a lot of non-Star Wars fans for the first time. Because it was trying to be that first and not be a Star Wars. But, you know, just because there's Wars in the name doesn't mean we can't have fun. You know, give me my rom-com. I want it. So bad. Yeah.
And one thing I really did like about Phantom Menace, the first time I saw it, is that it's shiny and it's goofy. I mean, like, they almost get eaten by a sea serpent. Mm-hmm. And it really kind of feels like, you know, a reminder that, oh, yeah, you know, this isn't what an homage to do with Flash Gordon serials. Mm-hmm. Like, this looks like a Flash Gordon movie if they add actual money. You have to just, like, take Finn's to an iguana and shoot it in close up to make it, you know, a dinosaur.
Yeah. But I want more. Like, let's do more of that. Like, make Star Wars fun. Because I think it can be fun. I think it should be fun. Because it's also not just one thing. It's grown so big that Star Wars can be multiple. I shouldn't say can be. It is multiple different things to multiple different people. You know, we have original Star Wars fans, and it's something to them. Versus prequel friends, versus sequel friends. So many of my friends, their first Star Wars was Force Awakens. And if we want this to continue to grow, because Star Wars is going to outlive all of us. Let's make that clear. It doesn't matter whether or not you like it. It's going to outlive us. Every single one of us. But it needs to continue to grow. It needs to continue to evolve. Because it can't just be the bunch of white people in the 1977 saving the galaxy, and we have the one Lando. We can't do that anymore. It has to grow with the times. It has to evolve, or it's going to die. Do we want Star Wars to die? Shitty boys on the internet do. But they can, you know, that's not how it grows. And
it's okay that it's not all going to be successful. I think that's something that we have to also accept, that as long as it's trying new things, I said this once before about George Lucas making Star Wars. I'm going to say it again. I would rather things try something new and fail than not try at all. I'd rather something try to be innovative, try something wild and crazy. I love the show Star Wars Resistance. It is the redheaded stepchild of Star Wars animation. And I will stand by it because it broke a lot of ground. Was it the most well-made? No. But without Resistance breaking that kind of storytelling, we wouldn't have Andor. We wouldn't have Kenobi. Because it was the first show to not try and change canon. It was just, I actually call it a on-screen Star Wars novel. It's about a group of characters in the corner of the galaxy doing their own thing, and they don't touch canon at all. And it is a character exploration of what happens when fascist governments come into a small town and how that small town reacts to it. That is the plot. And actually, the plot of Resistance is the exact same plot of Andor. It's about the fascists coming into a town and how the town reacts to it. That is the plot of these two shows. But Resistance did it first. And it's Andor for kids. And I still stand by that. I will always stand by that. But it failed in a lot of ways for other shows to succeed. And it had a lot of wild firsts in it. It actually is the first on-screen queer couple franchise, which is my boys Orca and Flex. Now, are they husbands and boyfriends? We don't know because it's never confirmed on screen. It was just J.K. Rowling off screen because it makes me mad. But it still broke a lot of ground in that way. And I would rather it try and fail to set groundwork for other things for Star Wars to succeed. That's how Star Wars is going to succeed. Not by not having plans like the sequel trilogy and kind of playing it safe. It needs to try and swing wildly for the fences. Because oftentimes you will hit a home run like Andor. Sometimes you might get it out and get to first base. Or you might not get to first base at all. But if we're not trying these new things, Star Wars will die. And that is what George Lucas was doing with The Phantom Menace. He could have made another New Hope. He could have just delved into that. He could have made Anakin just like another Luke Skywalker through in another Han Solo and another Princess Leia. He could have made the exact same movie and made millions and bajillions of dollars. And he didn't. He got in his little fancy Porsche, turned around, sped off the other way into Angstown, and made one of the most iconic villains of all time a scared child with his mom. He made this character that was a homage to vaudeville and broke ground with CGI to do so. He chose to do these wildly expensive digital cameras that no one had in their theaters to play them. I think it only played in 16 theaters in its original ground, but that's the norm now. Digital filmmaking is the norm now. And he chose to do all these wild things. And yeah, people didn't like The Phantom Menace, but a lot of people did. And we wouldn't have Star Wars today without it. We wouldn't have these wild and crazy evolutions in the franchise. We wouldn't have The Acolyte coming next month, which is a very queer and has a lot of black, brown and people in it as well. This crazy diverse Star Wars without a Mace Windu breaking that ground, right? Without that Death of the Alba being on the council. It broke ground in a lot of ways, like it or not, flaws and all. And this is what I like about The Phantom Menace. I like that it's a mess. It is a hot mess. But it's an important hot mess because we learned a lot from it. And it set the stage for Star Wars as we have it now. And I dig that about this funky little movie. It's a funky little movie. I love it so much. So, are we on 50 minutes or hour? What's this?
Hour.
Wow, we have a whole 13 minutes.
I would also say that it broke some ground too in the fandom, as far as fanfiction community was at that time, because I was part of a group of people that did write some Han and Luke stories back in the day. But there was not very many stories in the original trilogy that people read. There were a couple scenes. There were, you know, it was not this whole thing. And then all of a sudden we have Phantom Menace, and it just like, it blew up. A lot of the different writing groups, people were like, okay, I'm coming from X-Files to this, or whatever they were coming from.
Yeah.
It was a massive community at the time. There was lots of stuff. There was a lot of exploration going on, and they were going, oh, they're exploring these things, and there's planet guides and character guides and all this stuff, and we can take these and we can go in our own direction with this. We don't like what happened here. It was amazing a lot of the creativity that came out of that show that, you know, a lot of it didn't follow. Because a lot of people went, boo, hiss to the other movies that came in that trilogy, but it was just quite amazing.
So I wanted to, you were talking about all the creativity that came from it. I want to make sure, I had to look this up to make sure I had the right number. Crazy thing is, Phantom Menace on its own introduced 40 new aliens to the franchise.
Whoa.
40! And some of these are ones that we still have, like Zabrax, that starts Maul, Jar Jar, which is the Venom's 2 after Kai Kongans, Toydaria, Toydarians, Alina, Nymordians, Doves, like, these are still, like, really popular characters that are used today. And, like, the other two prequels also introduced more characters, too, as well. But it's crazy, like, how much George Lucas was like, I have a budget now. And then to have all I have with me, he's like, oh, no, I'm running out of money. Yes.
Yeah, I think one people forget, when Star Wars came out, the movies were dying. And people weren't going to movies. And Star Wars, when it came out, people were going to 20 and 30 times.
Yes.
And that was unheard of. I mean, nothing has been like that since, except maybe Harry Potter.
Yeah. My co-podcaster is an original Star Wars fan, and he's told stories about how, like, he was like, his mom was like, here's $20 to go see Star Wars 5 times. We'll pick you up in like 8 hours.
Well, in its original format, I'm in front of Atlanta here, and it played at one particular theater that was our most expensive mall, because they could only afford the equipment. But we would go up and line up for that, like 2 or 3 hours. I mean, you had to. You go and see a lion, and that was not for the current show because it was already sold out. That was for the next show. And we would wait. And some people would then get back in line and wait another 2 hours to see it again.
Yeah, I think like it's so hard to comprehend how wild the marketing for Phantom Menace was as well. Like, it was everywhere. Pepsi created its own alien named Marfalo, and this Pepsi alien was this, it's so great. There's like 3 commercials of him hanging out with, like, one of them kind of gets in the theater with Jake Boyd hanging out. But it's this CGI, fully realized character. There's actually like a little 6-minute documentary on the making of Marfalo. It's really fun to watch. So I saw you with your hand.
Well, I was just thinking it was also the technical aspect, because none of the movies, I mean, all the movies at that point were, the monster was usually a guy in a rubber suit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it looked like it, you know.
Yeah.
And that was the first one that had aliens that were believable.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why Jar Jar, I will always stand Jar Jar. Like him or hate him, like, we would not have movies today without him. Because there were, like, plenty of background characters and stuff like that that were fully, but he was the first fully realized secondary character in CGI. And he is why, I said earlier, that's why we have Gollum. That's why Andy Serkis has a job for so long. And it's because of that technology. And it's mind-blowing. But yeah, it was dated now. It's 25 years later. Like, I'm sure George Lucas would love to do another, like, remaster, as they always do. And then maybe, like, Jar Jar can say McClunky. We'll see. Made myself laugh. It's fine. But, like, the technology used in Phantom Menace was so important to cinema. Like, you don't have to like the movie, but I tell people, you need to at least respect it to how it changed the course. And that's what George Lucas has always wanted to do. He's always wanted to break this new ground. He did with Star Wars.
You know, before that, some of the big things were like Dune. You know, that was kind of the Dune and Star Trek, I would say. I would throw those two. But it was something that people had never seen before. And it was mind-blowing. And he made it on, like, Ben Burtt, Luck, and Bubblegum stuck together in this amazing film that has stood the test of time. And it really did change the course of cinema. And it changed again with the prequels, especially with this movie. That's why we still have ILM doing their thing. And it's... I know that people give it crap, but I can't help it. And it's just fun. That's a fun movie. I think that's something that we kind of forget so much in this age of giving, like, caring so much about canon or caring so much about, like, whether, like, X, Y, and Z lines up with the A, B, C at the beginning and stuff like that. Sometimes things are just fun. It doesn't have to be this great groundbreaking, like, mythological, like, brain-bending thing. Sometimes things are just fun. It's okay just to have a good time and not think about, like, how ABC connects to XYZ. Just, it's entertainment.
Calm down, Greg. It's Star Wars. Why are we...
And I love Star Wars. Star Wars is incredibly important to me. Like, there's a reason I have, like, Ahsoka Tano on my phone. She means so much to me. And it has helped me through my hardest times in life. It's helped me through, like, losing my house and, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, Star Wars is so important to me emotionally, deeply. But it's also Star Wars. Like, it's calm down, Greg. It's fine. I saw your hand.
Well, I always think about how, I mean, I know, like, Death is the creator and blah, 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 but I like at least knowing the context of what a creator intended. And however much he did or didn't succeed with this, George Lucas has always said that Star Wars was for kids. Mm-hmm. He's always been very consistent about saying that. And so, and yeah, first time I saw the original movie, I was 6 years old. Watch. Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi when I was 8, and then the next year Phantom Menace came out, and so I grew up with the prequel trilogy, and yeah, Phantom Menace especially, it's really for kids.
It really is a kids movie.
Even with the political stuff, and I was talking with my best friend as I was driving down here, and she came to Star Wars entirely as an adult, and she did the thing of, like, watching the 4 and 5 and then going back and watching the prequels and then watching 6. I was like,
oh, that's the shedding order. Yeah.
So, like, I'd heard about that order, and I was like, and when she was gonna get into it, I was like, why don't you try this and see how it goes for you? She loved getting into the movies that way. She was like, it just works so well. But yeah, I just have, and like you said, it's fun, and why on earth does that have to be a bad thing?
And I think that, like, I'm going to use the two wildly differentest examples. I think there's a place in Star Wars for, like, this hard-hitting political thriller like Andor. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that there's a place for Star Wars for the prequel series Young Jedi Adventures, which is essentially the Bluey of the Phantom. It is pure preschool fun of kids, these kids learning how to go on adventures and, like, do stuff. And it's a delightful little show. It is very pure. My favorite character is Rexlow, who is a bird who's really into deforestation. And capitalism. This bird is like, and when the Jedi show up and they're just like, Raxla, you're cutting down all the trees. He's like, I literally have bills to pay. Why are you talking to me? Like, I have real world problems, Jedi. Go away. Love, but they can both exist, you know? And the funny thing is in all of Star Wars animation, and I'm specifically saying animation, the preschool show is the gayest. As lesbian moms and a non-binary character, like, it is literally the gayest Star Wars and the preschool show of all things. I sometimes hate Star Wars a lot. Driving crazy. do think there's a time and place for really hard analysis. Andor is there to show us how we are cogs in a fascist capitalism machine, and to make us think and feel bad about it, and to make us think about what our place is as a cog. And then there's stuff like that in a minute. Which is fun. It has a place.
I would say that those characters probably perfectly placed because the kids watching that, as they grow up, they just accept it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why I was talking about Resistance earlier. Like, it is Andor for kids. It introduces the exact same concept. It actually goes into concepts that are not explored in Andor's because Andor doesn't have a lot of aliens in it. And there's a lot of aliens in Resistance. And they are definitely at one point treated like second-class citizens put inside cargo holds to go to camps to never be seen again by the First Order. Yes, you click that. Andor doesn't tackle that, and it is tackled in this kid show, and that's why it is important, you know, to have something like Phantom Menace and Resistance so kids can grow up with these concepts to eventually get to the harder kid stuff. This might be our last one, yes.
I was just thinking of like Rogue One, and in some ways, kind of emphasis of Phantom Menace, but that is a very, very grown up movie. That's more of just on the Wars half rather than the Star half. It is very explicitly like a World War II movie. It's a French Resistance movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's Cassian Andor, who we needed. The first thing he does is kill the guy who's an ally, because this guy's going to sell him out. You know, this is one of our heroes.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I opened this saying that Phantom Menace is my third favorite Star Wars movie. Rogue One's my first. That's my favorite Star Wars movie. I love Rogue One. So we have a minute left. So I'm just going to say, first of all, thank you all for coming out. My name is Hope. Thanks for coming. But let me talk about one of my favorites. If you want to see me do cool stuff, I'm on a Star Wars tabletop roleplay podcast. And if you want to see, it's we're an all queer cast. So if you want to see six gays not know how to Star Wars and roll dice horribly, it's called For My Dice, and you can go see it. And you can also see my work at the Kiki Waffle, which is what I'm here for this weekend. So thank you all for coming out and talking about this messy bitch of a movie. Here's our cute artwork. Take care of that.
I think it's we're in the middle of our second season right now, so.
Okay.
But it's a fun little show. I'm the bird.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Jawa Waro Mogili Makalonki Una Noto Washagi Wampit.